This episode of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine was made possible by contributions from slaves like you. Thank you very much.
Bill Clinton had become president with the vision of using political power to transform America. But he had been persuaded to give away that power to the financial markets, with the promise that this time they would create a new kind of stability. A new kind of democracy, free of the corruption of elite politics. But it was now becoming clear that in reality, America's political power had just been transferred to another elite, the financiers and Wall Street. And when faced by a crisis, they had simply used that power to rescue themselves. In the process, far from creating stability, their actions were leading to a chaotic and far more unstable world.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine, the show where you don't have to be a monk to discover the sound of one hand clapping.
Do you think your Wu-Tang sword can defeat me?
Motherfucker! Hit me in the ear!
I am your host, Stimulator, and if you're a Gen Xer like me, you'll probably remember the early 90s as a magical fucking time. NAS has just dropped Illmatic. All over the world, peeps were getting fucked up and going to raves, and we all got our first taste of surfing the World Wide Web.
The first thing that you need to know is that the internet is amazing, and it's changing every day. Once you've learned how to get online yourselves, you'll start seeing web pages everywhere. TV shows have them, schools, Disney World, even the White House.
What's a web page? Something ducks walk on?
And then, to top it off, in 1993, the United Snake's smooth sax-playing president, Billy Clint, told us all about a great new trade deal called NAFTA that was going to make the world a better, more prosperous fucking place.
We have made a decision now that will permit us to create an economic order in the world that will promote more growth, more equality, better preservation of the environment, and a greater possibility of world peace.
But like all politicians, Slick Willie was full of shit. Blue-collar workers in the United Snakes and Canada got totally fucked by NAFTA, with millions losing their jobs to corporate outsourcing, while millions of independent Mexican farmers lost their livelihood, leading to a crisis of mass migration that has continued unabated to this fucking day. Fast forward more than 20 years, and politicians are still up to the same fucking tricks.
They confuse the bad trade deals in the past with this one, which is the first time we've been able to get one that's even Steven.
Understandably, folks in labor and some progressives are suspicious generally because of the experiences they saw in the past. But my point is, don't fight the last war. Wait and see what we actually have in this deal.
The latest incarnation of NAFTA, the TPP, or Totalitarian Proletariat Pulverizer, has been expanded to include an additional 9 countries and has been dubbed by its critics as NAFTA on steroids. After years of top-secret negotiations, these taco-pinching pendejos finally released the text of the agreement back in November. And since then, high-priced corporate trade lawyers from the United Snakes have added their own special brand of legalese shit varnish, granting corporations even more protection for intellectual property rights.
I hereby inform you, under powers entrusted to me under Section 47, Paragraph 7 of Council Order Number 438476, that Mr. Buttle, Archibald, residing at 412 North Tower, Shangri-La Towers, has been invited to assist the Ministry of Information with certain inquiries, and that he is liable to certain financial obligations as specified in Council Order RB/CZ/907/X. Sign here, please.
This subtle rewrite will have grave implications on the cost of medicine in poorer countries in South America and Southeast Asia, and will force governments in all 12 countries to criminalize even small instances of copyright infringement.
Stim?
Yeah, I know, agitator. We're going to motherfucking jail.
Downloading films is stealing. If you do it, you will face the consequences.
The throbbing, purple-headed people fucker was signed on February 4th in Auckland, New Zealand, as thousands of peeps hit the streets to denounce their government as the puppets of the international corporate elite that they are. Massive protests have also rocked the streets of Chile and Lima, Peru, where 5,000 militants threw down on Thursday, February 25th, lobbing Molotovs at the pigs, who responded with live fucking rounds.
We reject the TPP because it's another step, another attempt by a government that bends its knees before capitalists and global corporations.
But by far the most militant protests have taken place in Japan. Check this shit out. Fucking intense. The Transnational Power Project not only needs to be ratified by the governments of each participating country before it officially becomes law. Here in Canada, while Justin Trudeau has yet to officially make up his mind, it's pretty fucking obvious that he's going to use his parliamentary majority to pass it. Because let's be fucking real, as Trudeau's international trade minister, Chrystia Freeland, explains, when it comes to fucking people over,
that is my job and the job of great Canadian companies.
And in other news, on Saturday, February 27th in Anaheim, California, anti-racist militants confronted several members of the KKK on their way to a racist fucking rally, beating the living shit out of them. During the fracas, several comrades were stabbed, one with the sharpened business end of a flagpole, and seven were arrested. Copwatch Santa Ana and the LA Anarchist Black Cross are currently accepting donations to help cover these comrades' medical and legal bills. For more info on how you can help, check out my fucking website, stimulator.tv.
Nessa equação chata, polícia mata, pô, médico salva, não, por quê? Cor de ladrão, desacato, invenção, maldosa intenção, cabulosa inversão, jornal, distorção, meu sangue na mão, dos radical cristão, transcendental questão, não choca opinião, silêncio e cara no chão, conhece, perseguição, se esquece, tanta agressão, enlouquece, vence o da Atena com luto e audiência, cura, baixa escolaridade, com alto de resistência, pois na era cyber, cês vai ler os livros que roubou nosso passado igual Alzheimer, e vai ver que eu faço igual Burkina Faso, nós quer ser dono do circo, cansamos da vida de palhaça, tipo Moisés e os hebreus, pés no breu, onde o inimigo é quem decide quando ofendeu, cê é louco.
Last October, so-called South Africa was rocked by a powerful student movement, which paralyzed the country with 3 weeks of intense protests, sparked by a proposed tuition increase. Under the banner of Fees Must Fall, thousands of pissed-off students stormed a parliamentary precinct in Cape Town and marched on the headquarters of the African National Congress, or ANC, in Durban and Johannesburg. This wave of struggle culminated on October 23rd, when tens of thousands of protesters rallied outside the office of the country's corrupt neoliberal strongman, Jacob Zuma, throwing down with the pigs and torching several porta-potties. Faced with the protesters' unwavering determination and the sheer fucking size of the crowds, Zuma backed down.
There will be a zero increase of university fees.
But rather than settling for this minor concession, student organizers have kept their eye on the motherfucking prize. Namely, free universal education and an end to the deep structural racism that continues to divide the nation into haves and have-nots. Despite the fall of apartheid in 1994, South Africa remains one of the most economically polarized countries on earth. In fact, under the ANC, inequality has only gotten worse. Almost 80% of its population are indigenous Africans, yet, thanks to the nation's colonial history, whites still own over 70% of the fucking land. And despite being the second largest economy in Africa, millions of its inhabitants live in sprawling rural slums, struggling to survive on less than a dollar per day.
Life is very rough. There are more than 40 of us sharing one toilet and a tap.
Zuma has been on the ropes since 2013, after it was discovered that he spent shit tons of public skrilla on opulent renovations to his casa. In recent months, a growing movement has been calling for him to be impeached and for an end to the ANC's 22-year rule. So, within this context of political crisis, the student movement exploded back on the scene in mid-February to remind peeps that shit is still fucking on. On February 15th, students at the University of Cape Town erected a corrugated tin shack on campus to highlight the lack of affordable housing available for students. pigs responded with flashbang grenades, which kicked things off. Militants soon torched two vehicles, including a university shuttle bus, then proceeded to engage the Popo in pitched street battles late into the night. On February 22nd, student and campus workers at the University of Free State disrupted a school rugby match to demonstrate their opposition to staff outsourcing and to show solidarity with striking workers. Soon after the disruption, a mob of white spectators swarmed the field and began attacking the protesters in a gross display of racist violence. 2 days later, at the Northwest University in Mafeking, the school administrator appointed a new student representative council after dissolving the previous one for being too fucking radical. In the protest that followed, a private security guard opened fire with live ammunition, with some reports suggesting that a student was killed. In response, militants torched several campus buildings, leading to a total suspension of classes. At the time of this writing, protests are continuing in numerous universities across the country and show no signs of stopping anytime soon. To learn more about this situation, I recently caught up with Alex Hutz, a member of Roads Must Fall, a grassroots student group that came together in March of 2015 and which has been a major force in the student movement ever since. Hey Alex, how the fuck are you?
It's a very loaded question. I'm surviving.
For viewers who might not know, who was Cecil Rhodes and why do people want his statue removed from the University of Cape Town campus?
Cecil John Rhodes is a symbol of white supremacy. He was a colonizer. He was one of the first British governors in colonized South Africa. And he plundered the resources of this country, genocided millions of black people and enslaved them, if not killed them. But also was the founder of racialized capitalism in this country, because he started the first huge mining companies which used and exploited the cheap labor of black people.
In recent years, university and high school students from so-called Quebec to Chile have shown that when students get organized, they can be a serious fucking force to be reckoned with. Can you tell us a bit about how the current student movement has spread throughout South Africa and how it is organized?
We've seen the South African government become a very repressive government that almost kind of mimics the apartheid state. So there's a lot of repression, police brutality, a clampdown on activities. So it's been a bit difficult to be coordinated in the same way in which it seems the Chilean students of India, Montreal, etc. So what you find now is a country that is deeply polarized, and students who are entering institutions that have had no change. They're almost the exact same institutions. They exist in the same way as they did under apartheid. And now black students having to go into these institutions and experience incredible psychological and epistemic violence, but also physical violence, as you've seen recently from white students, but management of the university and police. So it's been amazing to see how these protests have spread. So it started at Wits, it moved to us, and we had a national shutdown, which we coordinated through WhatsApp and, like Facebook, etc., etc. And obviously that's getting a little bit more difficult to do, because we know that the state, through the National Intelligence Agency, is trying to infiltrate our movements and to spy on many of us.
Last year saw an incredible level of student mobilization for the Fees Must Fall movement, which ultimately succeeded in rolling back planned tuition increases. How were peeps involved in this movement able to keep momentum going after achieving its initial aims?
So I think for us, and for many of us, it was never just about the 0% increase. We were calling for free education, and we still call for free education and the ending of outsourcing at all of these institutions. And so while that has been a victory, and it's been used to demobilize, you know, masses of students who supported and were active in Fees Must Fall, it was also interesting to see the masses of students who joined Fees Must Fall. And I think it's also because it never necessarily articulated a radical politic in the way in which we do in Roads Must Fall, the way where we have ideological pillars like Black consciousness, Pan-Africanism, Black radical feminism. So it was able to galvanize masses of students who not necessarily were, who had never been politicized before, and who had, this was like their first kind of entering of marches or protest action, etc. And I think it was useful to start in that kind of mobilization for the world and for South Africans to see the police brutality and manage the brutality that students face for such simple, non-violent demands, and how that was met with the violence of the state and the violence of the institution. So it's been very difficult, but I think it is clear in a country with such high inequality and poverty and racism, where black students are completely alienated and marginalized from the institution, that free education must happen in 2016 in order for the black majority in the country to be able to enter these institutions and not be excluded.
Because of its historic role in the struggle against apartheid, the African National Congress, or ANC, is seen by many people around the world as a torchbearer for anti-colonial struggles more broadly. Yet many people, including members of the Roads Must Fall movement, feel that the ANC has betrayed their original mission. Why is that?
We went through a negotiated settlement with the apartheid regime, which meant that many of the oppressive instruments that existed in this country to repress, alienate, exploit, and marginalize black people, and oppress black people, were left intact, especially the economy of the country, right? So mining stayed intact, agriculture, etc. People retained the wealth, white people retained the land. And you never saw, black people to this day have not seen any kind of redistribution or even compensation or reparations for what has happened to us in this country. So I think, for me, the ANC continues and has always been like a buffer and a gatekeeper for white supremacy, white supremacist capitalist patriarchy. And their position now, as Bernan would speak of, is they are the comprador class, the middleman between those who still retain power and the black majority.
The ANC is currently facing a challenge from the left, coming from a new party called the Economic Freedom Fighters, or EFF. What is the relationship between the student movement and the EFF? And do you feel that the betrayal of the ANC has soured many South Africans' opinion on traditional electoral politics?
So the EFF, the rise of the EFF, I think is incredibly important in this country to challenge this notion that this generation is apathetic or apolitical. And you can see the EFF over a very short period of time gained huge support. But I suppose the EFF, just like the ANC, has an incredible amount of contradictions. So many of them come from the ANC and have grown up in the ANC and in other movements that are very close to the ANC, like the South Africa, SASCO and Young Communist League and the ANC Youth League, which are all kind of linked to the ANC. And, you know, they talk about economic freedom, etc., and nationalizing of the economy, but there's also a challenge about how within that organization, materialism through its leadership is kind of accepted and it goes unchallenged.
South Africa has a variety of other powerful social movements, such as the country's trade unions and the shack dwellers movement, Abashali Basem Jomdolo, or ABM, which I understand has a large section in Cape Town. Has there been much overlap and solidarity between students and some of these other social movements?
I think for us to see the rise in social movements like Abashali Basem Jomdolo and the way in which they raised and put the issue of housing and land to the fore of political discussion and debate has been incredibly important. But I think what's also been really interesting in our engagement as young people with these political organizations and social movements to say that as young people from one generation to another, you know, we are forging our own struggle and we are fighting our own battles and we would like your support, but in a way that is not patronizing, that is not telling us what to do, but really being able to learn together and unlearn together and build a bigger, broader movement, because we know that we cannot do this by ourselves.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Maybe just to say that I think it's critical that we build genuine transnational solidarity as young people and as students across the world. So to support the students of India, to support the students of Chile, Brazil, South Africa, Canada, Kenya, who are struggling for the same things we are in countries where we are repressed, brutalized, etc. I think we can learn a lot from each other and support each other.
Thanks, Alex. And that about does it for this edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine. If you'd like to find out the names of the songs we played, the movies we sampled, or to subscribe to our podcast or email list, just visit my fucking website, stimulator.tv. In case you didn't know, this show is funded by micro donations from wage slaves who rather get their news from this floating composite. So, my undying love this week goes out to the following slaves: Marisol, Joseph, Kirk, Willie, Gerard, Justina, Jeremy, Reto, Renzo, Yifan, Sebastian, Christopher, Alexandra, Ricky, Andrew, Jason, Dylan, Mason, Masiage, Sarah, Gregory, Jennifer, Martin, Jonathan, Max, Gomo, Jonathan, Kyle, Steven, Miguel, and Shannon, Tejuino. I would also like to welcome the newest members of the Ta Conspiracy, Christopher, Stinsky, and Daniel, Chirmole. Stay tuned next time for more news from the global motherfucking resistance. Que la pasen chingón, camaradas.